Yeah. You're checking out the Slam Magazine Respect the Game podcast. You heard it first from your boy, Jay.
What's good, world? It's your boy Pete Walsh, aka Lamborghini Petey. Episode 38 of the Respect the Game podcast, Slam Online. I'm with my boy Abe Schwadron. As always, Abe, how are you, brother?
Yo, aka Abraham Lincoln Bio, ready to go. AKA, very special guest in the building right
AKA
now.
AKA Abraman, whose man's is this?
Yep.
And yes, you're right. We do have a very special guest in here, one of Jersey's finest. Bi-coastal now. Yeah. Al Harrington. Al, thank you for joining the show, man. Thank you for coming by.
Yeah, hold on. Before we start, I need a nickname too, bro.
AKA Cheddar.
Oh, Buckets. I like Buckets. Buckets. AKA I still can Buckets. Get a bucket, I swear.
I know. How old are you now?
36, about to be 37 in a couple weeks.
I mean, when you get in that 10-day, man, you look like you can still get out there.
You know, there's a lot of money being thrown around still. So.
Hey, after this big summer, you never know. I might have some people calling, you know?
Very true.
Well, speaking of making money playing basketball, Al is here. On behalf of the Gotham Ballers, and the Champions League, he'll be playing in that in the future at some point. So, you know, Al, why don't you just tell us a little bit about the Champions League, how you got involved, and all that.
Well, the Champions League was presented to me by a guy named John Askew, I would say maybe two summers ago now, and he was telling me about the concept. And I was like, I think that's dope, because I think it's true. What he was saying was that a lot of guys, you know, are forced into retirement, you know what I mean? And you know, sometimes rightfully so or whatever. Maybe definitely the younger guys are definitely getting a lot better and stuff. But you have a lot of older players that still feel like they got something left in the tank and they still want to play at a high level. So they feel like this league, or at that time he was telling me this league could provide that. And I believed in it from day one. I was like one of the day one signees. And all the events that we've had has been very true. Guys are very competitive, and you know, we all kick it or whatever. But once we get between them lines, we really start going at each other. So it's cool, you know, to supplement some of this competition that we need to get out of our systems.
Yeah. So who are some of the other guys? You know, I'm sure you had conversations with them going into it. Like, are we really going to do this? Like, what were some of those conversations like? And who are some of those other guys' names that we might recognize?
Well, the guys that I was always talking to was like Steven Jackson's, Kenyon Martin, Mike Bibby, Ricky Davis, Katino Mobley, who looked like Uncle Drew.
he is the real life Uncle Drew.
He's like
Drew.
The real Uncle Drew. Yeah, so I was talking to a bunch of guys, and they was all saying, like, if this is real, this is something that we should all look into, and it'd be fun, you know what I'm saying, to kind of, you know, playing basketball and playing and hanging out in the hotels and kicking the dinners and stuff. Like, you know, we've become, you know, accustomed to that, and that's like our normal, you know what I'm saying? So when you can get to be able to do that again, it's like, it's special.
Is there any one of those names that stood out to you as like, as far as like, yo, this dude really still has a lot left in the tank? Like, if, in a league like this, like, he might really stand out.
Yeah, beside yourself, of course.
Man, well, no, I mean, definitely Ricky Davis.
Like, really?
Ricky Davis runs around like he can definitely play in the league tomorrow.
Really?
Like, every time we work out, every time we have an event, he's the one that impresses me by far.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that name to be the one.
I mean,
so like, we haven't heard from him in a minute.
I don't know. That's what I said, too. I'm like, what's the problem? Like, you still moving like that? You're not playing nowhere?
I'm hyped to see Jamal Tinsley out there, man.
Mel looks good, too. Yeah. Because, you know, Mel, you know, he decided to get, it's funny, like, all these guys decided to get, like, super, super healthy when they stop playing.
Yeah.
Like, I remember Mel, like, not that he was, like, eat anything, but, like, I mean, now, like, he eats so clean. And then, like, even a guy like Steven Jackson, and I can say this about him because he's on record of saying that, like, I couldn't get Jack to work out at all in the summertime. And then, like, now he's, like, eating weights and he's landing in the middle of the night places going straight to the gym. I'm like, dude, for free? I'm saying, you millions and you ain't want to do that.
That is funny, though. It's like, you know, when you're a young guy in the league, I mean, I have never been a young guy in the league, but I feel like we see on social media and we hear the stories like you're saying right now, like, oh, yeah, like, I was eating McDonald's and whatever. And then you become someone in your 30s or whatever and you start to realize all these, like, you know, options for eating and stuff like
it
that.
It catches up to you fast, man. Yeah. I promise it catches up to you fast.
Yeah.
I was just 18.
And then, you know, one cool thing that I got to mention about the Champions League is, you know, especially with the Gotham Ballers, you know, they give the fans a chance to invest in the team. You can buy stock in the franchise. This gives you, you know, access to players, to go into getting discounted tickets, going to player meet and greets, courtside seating, owners parties. And, you know, you played in New York for a few years. You're from Jersey. So, you know, you know how important basketball is to the community around here. Mm-hmm. So, like, just giving a fans the chance to, you know, be that involved with the team. I mean, how special is that for a fan, do you think?
I think it's amazing. I mean, one thing I think Carl George, who's the owner of the league, what he did was, you know, he came up with a great game plan. Mm-hmm. And he wanted this team to be, or the whole league to be, like a community. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's the best way ever, is obviously incorporating guys that played in these different markets, but then allowing the fans to have that accessibility to be like, I actually own the team that those guys play for. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's funny, like, I was talking to a couple NBA owners or billionaires or whatever, and like, their biggest thing is that
jealous,
right? Yeah. They buy teams just to be able to brag to their friends that they own something that they cannot have. You know what I'm saying? So you just think about it for that level for them. So to actually just a regular, you know, fan of the Knicks being able to own a team that, you know, some of their favorite players play for, you know, or play for currently. So I think this is a great opportunity. I think it's a great marketing thing. And it's definitely going to bring, you know, more people and get them involved, because they actually got a piece, they get a piece of the action.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, I mean, I know there's a million NBA-related topics from your career that we want to jump into. Before Pete goes off into any other realm, though, I want to start with the most recent team, because that's my favorite team, the Wizards.
All right.
I mean, having, you know, you were there very recently. You know this team, like, pretty well. I mean, the Wizards are super hot right now. You know, Wall and Beal playing very well. So, like, what have you seen from them recently, and what do you think, you know, how are they going to shake out this season?
It's always what I envision for them too, man. You know, like, me and Trevor, you know, and I would say Nene, we helped change the culture there in the 1 year I was there. And then after that, they brought in Paul, and Paul kept pushing it forward. And I think what, you know, what we all did was just instilling those two guys that, like, you guys are the men, you know what I'm saying? And people are only going to follow you guys and going to follow your lead. And you have to step up and be leaders, because you got that kind of talent. And I think that they're both starting to realize that right now, which is very exciting and good to see. And I think that in the past, too, their relationships seem to be pretty stagnant. And it's very true what people would see. But it seems like they're starting to get on the same page. And I always knew that once they could get on the same page. And it's funny, I actually went to a wine tasting thing with my wife and Brad's girl. And we all went. I think Trevor Ariza was there. And, you know, while we were riding riding all through the vineyards or whatever, me and Trevor were sitting back there telling him, like, how important that him and John's relationship, unless they can change that and get on the same page, they're not going to have success. And then, like, just to see last night, I was watching the highlights of when John was dunking and Brad standing over him and all that type of stuff. In the past, you hadn't been seeing that, and it's a good thing. And I think that's the reason why they're having the success they're having.
Yeah, and I mean,
follow-up, Mr. Wizards?
I mean, I have 100 follow-ups. We have to get to other stuff. But I mean, I just remember, like, that team had a fun vibe around it when you were there. Mm-hmm. Drew Gooden well.
Goody.
So what was kind of, like, the locker room vibe there, having you two guys there? Obviously, like, you know, you're kind of in the last stages of your career. You definitely want to, like, groom the young guys to be, you know, become what they're becoming now, but you still want to have fun and stuff. So, like, what was kind of the locker room vibe around that?
It was chill. It was real chill. It was like any other locker room I feel like I've ever been in. You know what I'm saying? I've always been, it seems like, since I've been like 27, 20, I've always been like one of the older guys in the locker room, especially from a year standpoint, because I'm at year 10 at that point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we kept it chill. You know, obviously we were the OGs, and, you know, any problems and whether on or off the court, they was always bringing it to us and stuff like that. But the vibes was cool. You know, I feel like, you know, that was at the time when the culture changed there. And it seems like it's continued to evolve.
You good?
Yeah. I mean, right, we could do 2 hours on the Wizards, but I'm not going to hold the podcast
World
hostage.
Champions 2018.
Yeah, man.
Washington Wizards.
Let's go.
So I want to take it all the way back. You know, while we were sitting here before we turned the mics on, we were just talking a little bit about St. Pat's, where you went to high school, mm-hmm. which is now the Patrick School.
Right.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about the one and done rule in college. You jumped straight to the pros after high school. You know, there's a documentary that came out pretty recently about Ben Simmons' time at LSU, and basically the gist of it was, like, he didn't understand why he had to be there because he was good enough to be getting paid and playing in the NBA. So I guess, you know, what are your thoughts on the one and done rule. And if you were to go back in high school to high school, would you go pro again, or would you go to college for a year or two or three?
Well, to answer my, about me first is, of course, I would definitely do the same thing. You know, I feel like it was the best move I ever could have made. You know what I'm saying? I would have been going to school with the same attitude as he had. It's just like I'm just passing time by to get drafted in June, you know. He's right. I mean, it makes no sense for a one-and-done rule. I just don't get it because, it, you know, number one, it affects the university's graduation rates and different things like that. So why even mess with it? You know what I'm saying? If a kid is good enough to get paid out of high school to play basketball, and it's proven that we are, you know what I'm saying? I mean, when you look at the success of high school players, it's like off the charts. I mean, if it was 50 guys that went, it was only 5 that didn't make it. So that lets you know that it was okay. Like, what was the problem? And that was my biggest issue, is I never understood the reason why they ended the rule. I mean, was it guys were coming in getting in trouble? No. Were they using drugs? No. What was the issue? And I mean, they want to say we wasn't mature enough, but 1 year in college when all you're probably going to do is chase girls and play basketball, you're going to really grow up. Like, you know what I'm saying? So that rule is something that I totally don't agree with. And maybe I feel so strongly about it because I was able to do it. And, you know, it's just, it doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah. And I mean, my whole thing is like, all right, people like to point to the people who flamed out or didn't, you know, have long successful careers after coming out of high school. But, you know, even if you're coming out of high school and you get drafted and you play in the league for 2 years, let's say, and you flame out, that's, you're still making millions of dollars.
More money than you would make. Because my whole thing is, if you're going to flame out, you're going to flame out in college. So it would feel happier to see him flame out in college and never make any money. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. I mean,
if with those 2 years, if for some reason they were smart about it, you know, maybe they could set themselves up for their future just by that. You know what I'm saying? So I don't agree with the rule at all. They got to change it at some point.
So, I mean, all that being true, right, and we all kind of agree about that, but obviously the rule is in place right now. So let's say, you know, you're consulting a kid who's looking at his college options right now, or, I mean, we've seen a couple kids go overseas. Like, would you kind of steer them towards, you know, a powerhouse, Kentucky, Duke, whatever? Would you steer them like an LSU, like Ben Simmons, where he can kind of do his own thing? Would you steer him overseas? Like, if I'm putting you in the consultant role, what are you telling him?
I would actually tell him to go – It depends on how good they are. Mm-hmm. Like, if, like, you know, some guys you just know they're that good, period. You know what I'm saying? And then there's some guy, you don't know. So a guy that we just know is, you know, one, like, I would just use, like, this kid, Marvin Bagley, who I've watched play a lot in L.A.
Number one recruiting next year.
Like, if I'm his consultant, I'll send him to China for a year. Like, you know, it makes sense for him to go to school. You know, just go get paid. Why go make $2 million off your name? You know what I'm saying? Give you a little cushion coming into the league. But, you know, if a guy is good enough, I think what school really doesn't matter. You know what I mean? I think that when you go to Kentucky's and stuff like that, you know, you got to luck up because you're going with so many other good players and you don't know what their mindsets are, because you got guys that will be there like, oh, I'm one and done. I'm about to chuck every time. And now you a big man that should get the ball in the post.
Well, that's the thing. And if you get stuck at Kentucky for more than 1 year, all of a sudden you might get passed by or someone else taking your
second round.
Well, I've heard, I'm sure it's a rumor, and I love Coach Cal, so I ain't trying to say anything. But I heard Coach Cal tell them guys, look, you got 2 years to get to the NBA. Somebody's coming and taking your spot.
But I respect that. Yeah, I respect that about Coach Cal, though. Like, he keeps it honest with the kids, at least.
Right.
Because, like, a lot of college coaches just have their own agenda, and it's like, you know, it's all about them and the program, and like, all right, they'll take the one and done kid, but he'll play my way. Coach Cal is like, look, man, you're coming here and you're going to the league, and if you don't, it's my fault.
It's like, for him, I feel like he just puts you on a platform to get drafted. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to give you every opportunity to go out there and show all your skills and get the hell out of this university.
All right, so so your quote-unquote college years, right? You're 18, 19, you come in. Like, what were those years as far as, like, getting adjusted to the NBA? Because I always refer to, like, there was some stories about, I mean, Kwame Brown, for instance, there's a famous story. He was finally, it's someone from the team checked in on him. He had Popeye's boxes everywhere in his apartment, suits thrown in the corner. Like, how did you adjust to being on your own and being in the NBA and not having any of that college experience?
Well, see, for me, what I was lucky was that I came on to a very veteran team. And Kwame did, too. when you really think about it. But what happened, what I see what happened over there was like it was Jordan and Oak and all those guys. And I just feel like they didn't have enough time to actually nurture them and teach them the right way. But I came in with like Dale Davis, Antonio Davis, Reggie Miller, Chris Mullin took me under his wing.
Mark Jackson,
Derek
too, right?
McKee. Yeah, like, yeah. So they taught me how to be a pro. So for me, I always had a good work ethic, so it was like perfect for them because those were guys that worked hard all the time. So I just fell right in line. And then I tell people a lot of times, it's like, there was like, how was the adjustment? Like going from Jersey to this and that. And I just think that it was one of those youthful things of like just youthful innocence. I didn't know any difference. So yeah, I just kind of just went and rolled with the punches. And because there was such a good structure there, especially with Larry Bird, because he was like militant, you know what I'm saying? The way he ran things and stuff like that. It was just something I just fell into, and I feel it helped definitely shape the reason why I was able to play professional basketball for 17 years, mm-hmm. which from what they taught me from day one.
Is it weird that now multiple dudes from that team have been or are NBA coaches already? Like the span of your career is, you know what I'm saying?
It's not weird. I mean, you would think that's just our natural progression because True. We love the game so much. You know what I mean? And I'm one of those guys, too. It's just it so happened I had a business that kind of allowed me to not focus so much on basketball when I was done. But I always thought the same thing. I felt like I was going to end up being a head coach in the league. And you never know, it may still happen or whatever. But I think everybody just wants to stay in the game and give back, you know. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so breaking news, Al Harrington open to coaching Coach positions. Harrington. Finally breaking some news on the podcast.
I already got you. My man T. Lou told me if I want to coach you, he might have a spot for me.
See? Oh,
so you, there we go. You, Iverson, Garnett, right, all right. On the Cavs bench. I'm here for it.
Right.
But no, I mean, it just goes to show much or how important, like, I'm trying to figure out the
it's
right
the
way
fit.
To win.
It's everything.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, this is like, the same thing that I've talked about a million times about Kawhi Leonard going to the Spurs versus
someone going to
Jan Vesely
Kings
showing up with the Wizards. Like, it's different. It just, you know, it's a fit thing. Like,
man, that's so, look, I mean, I'm happy you spoke to that. That's so true. Like, culture is everything, man. It's like, it's the one thing I can say about when the high school kids were coming out, even if the young, when I was coming out, it was veteran teams. Then the league flipped, and it flipped pretty quickly, where it was like an older league to a younger league. Mm-hmm. And then the only time I would say where it is difficult when you have a high schooler come into a locker room full of a locker room that's run by 22 and 23 year olds because there's nothing they can learn from.
You know what's so crazy about that? Peter was just saying, isn't LeBron the oldest
All-Star
this year?
Right. I believe.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Wild.
31
years
old.
32. Okay. Yeah, just turned 32.
The league is flipping again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
But there's so much. I feel like it's like a little different now because there's just so much more money to be made, you know, compared to your rookie year. Like if you're 19 and you come in, and I don't know, obviously everybody's different, everybody's mindset is different. But like if you're 19, 20 years old, you're coming in, you're like, all right, if I keep my nose clean, I work hard, and I put up decent numbers, like I have a shot at making $15 million at one point in my career, which is just like mind blowing. And I don't know, it's like maybe tough to compartmentalize if you're 19 years old, but like I feel like that's kind of the new attitude in the league, you know?
Yeah, I think guys are definitely more conscious of the contracts and different. I mean, you got guys out here averaging 8 points, 6 rebounds, getting $15-16 million a year. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, when John Lohr got signed by the Pistons, no shots to John Lohr. I'm sure he's good. And he got like a $55 million deal. It was the first time I had ever heard of him.
And it's funny, I did too, because I have a chat room. It's me, Baron Davis, Steven Jackson, Monte Ellis.
Wait.
Keep going. Sorry.
Monte, group text. One of our homies called. One of our homies, his name is Term. And then one of our coaches, his name is Rico. And I said J.R. Smith. J.R. is in there, and C.J. Watson. So we're all in this group text.
Legendary group text.
How can we get in there? We will never say anything.
We
couldn't let you in there. Some of the stuff we cover in there. But when John Lohr signed, I put in the chat, I'm like, John Lohr? And everybody put question marks, except for Steven Jackson, because Jack played with him in Milwaukee.
Oh, in Milwaukee.
Jack was
I
played with him. And I was like, oh, he's been in the league? So you got him. I don't want to send shots, but I'm going to go to your Wizards. Imani Mahimi.
Yeah.
I'm like,
he's only played like a handful of games too.
I'm like 60-something million dollars. And what does he do? You know what I'm saying? But it is what it is. It's a blessing. You know what I'm saying?
Dude, another guy you play with, Mozgov, got
Mozzie.
Massive money, too.
But I like Mozgov. I think Mozgov is actually a pretty good player. You just got to use him right. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Because he's very athletic. He can shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. He blocks shots. You know what I'm saying? He's actually a good player. It's just depends on how you use him.
I said he was worth the money just for the photos of him after winning the title. Right. I saw those of him with the champagne yeah. and his Cavaliers cheerleaders.
Yo,
he used to be so innocent. I'll never forget. Like it would be things that would happen, and he'd just look at him. He was like 6 years old. You just feel so bad. Like, Mozzie, just come sit down.
All right, so we got limited time, and I'm sure there's many different stories like that. So I just want to hit a couple random things like before we got to say goodbye. Obviously you played for, you know, the We Believe Warriors team. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of your more famous squads that you were on. Mm-hmm. But not only that, but I mean, we just did a music issue. And mm-hmm. so we were talking a lot about Troy Hudson and Steven Jackson, who both had rap careers at one point or another.
Right, right.
So you got to tell us were there like cypher sessions going on in the locker room? Like, what was that locker room like?
All the time. Like, that was one, that was the best locker room I ever been a part of. Like, yeah. when I say brothers, we was brothers. Like, we used to go out every night as a squad, everybody. You even had Goose with us, Andrews Beedrins. You know, Goose.
I was about to ask that.
Even Goose would be with us. You know what I'm saying? Like, we did everything as brothers, man. I mean, we've had.
Even Bellinelli was out there?
Belly would come out eating cookies.
Wait, what?
I mean, every time. Yeah, Belly was skinny when he first got to the team, and he gained 15 pounds eating cookies. Like, you know, he came from Italy, and he never had an American chocolate chip cookie, and he ate one, and he lost his mind.
You're somehow connected to, like, the two most famous Twitter DM artists of our time, Bellinelli and J.R. Smith.
Facts.
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't need to interrupt you.
Yeah, don't know. Those are my guys. But, yeah, we, I mean, I can't give you all the stories, but there's times where I just knew we were going to get fined for off-the-court behavior.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying? But we were just always lucky. And I always say, like, when you roll with guys that just really don't care, then nothing ever happens. It's always the skies are scary. So I used to be scary in the beginning. I'm like, I just got to roll with it. But, yeah, that locker room was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you guys were awesome too. Like, not to mention that the product of the court was great too.
Should have, man. I'm gonna tell you where they messed up, and you know, no disrespect to what is his name? Kid from Brandon Wright. No disrespect to him.
It was the Brandon Wright trade.
Why trade Jay Rich? I never understood that. I mean, I understand they thought Monte was ready, but Monte one more year on the bench, it didn't stop, and he ended up not starting anyway. That next year, we ended up starting Petrius a lot of the times and Matt Barnes a lot of the time. Monte was special coming off the bench for that team. Me and him was the scoring options off the bench. You know what I'm saying? But I think that they should have kept us together for at least 4 years. But
when that happened, did that like send shockwaves through the locker room? Like, or was it just looking back? You think that?
Yeah, looking back on. I mean, when you think about it, when you in it, you on the whole time, so right. you don't care who there. You just like whoever we got, we about to roll. You know what I'm saying? And that next year, we had 46 wins and we missed the playoffs by one game. And I definitely feel like the two things we want to do a 30 for 30 on our team because we want to expose a lot of the stuff that we was doing.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So BD's been. Because BD's our TV plug
or whatever. Exactly.
So we've been, like, putting some stuff together and trying to, you know, we all want to produce it together and stuff like that and kind of tell our story. But that next year, even without Jay Rich, what the move that killed us was signing Chris Webber. And I don't know if nobody really remember that. But those 10 games he came, we lost like 5 games in a row and trying to adjust to him.
And he was like wearing like a wild number or something. It was just like strange.
I think it was wearing something in the 80s like when he was on there. Yeah.
Listen, big ups to Chris. But like, dude, he had no business coming to that team. Like, we're fast, exciting, and you had Chris. He couldn't even move. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah, but did he make beats? Like, did he make beats for Steven Jackson, though?
Nah, he didn't make no beats. He didn't make one beat. He was just like, he came in just with like an old swag. It threw us off too. Like, he's walking in with suits and still, and just he had his own little friends. Nas are coming, him and Nas over here. It was just different. You know what I'm saying? And then he ended up just like, you know what? This ain't for me. It threw our whole season off.
So I was going back through sort of the game logs and stuff, and that was a weird little section of that.
But then
got to get that 30 for 30. Yeah. Some of the stuff that happened, like BD stories and like all of our stories is amazing. I think people will love to hear it.
Yeah. But then you went to the Knicks, which was like equally as you know, random with the number of people that came and went during your time there. I mean, I was looking at the roster today. You had Darko Milicic on there at one point, Tracy McGrady.
Yeah.
It was just like a murderer's row of like the most random people.
It was New York. It's funny, man, because like I grew up a New York fan. And like when I got here, like that, it was everything. Like I think if you look at my game logs, I don't think I had. I probably had one or two bad games in New York. Like, New York always had the butterflies before the game. Mm-hmm. Like, I really wanted to stay here.
Yeah.
But you just had D'Antoni. I didn't mean to say that. I'm so sorry. Bloggers.
Fruity and Slip, man.
He just, I don't know, for some reason, I felt like I was very coachable. I just never could get an honest conversation out of him. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And just because I was willing to change my game for whatever he wanted for me to stay.
Yeah.
Oh, you're fine. Everything's fine. And then, you know, we felt like, you know, if we played three quarters every game, we'd have won 60 games that year.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The reason why we were losing was because in fourth quarter, like defensively, we just really had no real game plans. And he never felt like defense was important for whatever his reason was, his coaching style. He just felt like offense dictates defense. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I think if I even heard Phil Jackson coaches like that as well with the Lakers, they never really covered defense. But I just felt like we could have been a better team even with all the craziness that was around us. But they were just really setting up to get LeBron, and that was just a huge fail.
Yeah, I remember that was the reason they made the Tracy McGrady move at the
end.
They
made all the trades because they wanted to have no contracts that summer, which they did, and then they ended up signing Amari.
Yeah. You know,
whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wine baths and all that. That's pretty bold. I was like, damn, I can't wait to see him. Like, why don't you take baths and wine?
I mean, when you get a $100 million deal, man, you can enjoy some stuff like that.
Like, stat, that's dope.
So wait, does
In New York you can find a place to take a bath and wine anyway. I'm like, where else they do that?
How many calls do you think he had to make to find a place? It was like, yo, can you just load up a bathtub full of wine?
I really think he just did. I think that was his house. He tried to make it seem like he was somewhere. His wife was just pouring wine bottles in the drink. It was all kind of cake batter, this kind. It was all kind of...
All right, so, I mean, the next stop, look, I mean, I'm not trying to bring down the mood or whatever, but you mentioned coaches, and then we wouldn't be doing our job if I didn't let you either comment or no comment on George Karl,
who was the biggest ego coach I ever played for. When we win, it was his fault. When we lost, it was ours. What you want to ask about?
Well, I mean, I got to know what was going on that group text when that stuff. I mean, I heard that you were the one that supposedly texted it to Kenyon Martin, so... Yeah. What was, I don't know, I mean, you don't have to tell us what happened, but tell
us. Well, it wasn't too crazy. I mean, just most of the guys all just said, like, George, just, you know, I'm not going to say what they said, but, like, George, just go away already. Like, you had your career, just go sit down somewhere.
Yeah.
Kenyon was actually pretty smooth when I sent it to him. Like, I didn't know his reaction. He was at the gas station and how hot he was. But when I sent it to him, he's like, oh, really? He's like, where you get that from? And I was just like, oh, I got this little app or whatever. He was like, oh, all right, send me the rest of it or whatever. So I sent him the rest of it. And then after that, somebody hit me and was like, yo, you see your boy Kenyon going off on Twitter? And then I saw he was going crazy. But George is, I don't know with George, man. He was just, how can I explain it? I'll explain it like this. When I signed there, I had plantar fascia. I had plantar fascia or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, like, literally when I signed, I went from signing to going to get put in a walking boot. So I'm in the walking boot, and I come back to the locker room, and I had to, like, take some pictures or whatever. So George comes in there, and he sits down next to me, and we're talking or whatever. And he was just like, he was like, Al, how much money you made last year? And I was like, wow. He was like, no, how much money you made? And I was like, almost $11 million. He was like, oh, he was like, how many games you win? And I was like, we won 30 games or whatever. He was just like, any guy that makes over $10 million team should win 50 million, should win 50 games a year, like that. And I was like, oh, really? He was like, I mean, look at me. I win 50 every year. So I was like, you win 50? He's like, yeah, I win 50 every year. I was like, George, I ain't seen you play yet. Like, but just think about, like, that's my first conversation dude. You know what I'm saying? It's so, just, of course, me and him got off to the on the wrong foot. And then actually, by the time I left there, we were actually pretty cool until they traded me out. He took me to dinner in Vegas. I got staph infection in my knee from the team doctor there or whatever. He never checked on me, make sure I was okay or nothing. I tell George and then we talk about it or whatever. He takes me to dinner. he's telling me, like, you know, what he wants for me the next year and this, that, and the third or whatever. So I'm like, all right, cool. Then he also says to me, watch what you, because we went to a steakhouse and I ate good. So he's like, you got to watch what you eat, too. I don't want you to gain too much weight and all that. I'm like, all right, George. I leave. I go to therapy the next day, and I get there, and I put my leg into the thing, and breaking news, I got traded to Orlando.
What?
And I'm like... So I call George. He doesn't answer. I'm like, we just went to dinner the night before. And like,
oh, man.
Come on, man. Like, you didn't know? Like, you really going to take me to dinner the night before and do all that and then trade me the next day and like, don't even call me?
Yeah.
So George is George, man. Since that happened, obviously, I was just at a point in my career where I couldn't hold grudges anymore.
Yeah.
So, like, I've actually been cool with George, and if I see him, with cordial. But that whole book thing, everything he did with that book was just totally wrong. You know what I'm saying? But he loves attention, so I can understand him doing that. That's what he loves. Like, I'm telling you, to hear them guys talking about him, just to hear his name, I think it just turns him on. You know what I'm saying? So that's just the personality you're dealing with.
He always kind of came off as a crabby guy, too, you know? Like, never really... You know, the NBA, like, if you're a player or coach in the NBA, it's such... Like, it's really a privilege, I feel like, you know? And, like, I kind of just felt like he was... Almost felt like entitled. Like, he's like, yeah,
he's
I
like,
should be
I would
here.
Tell you who his swag is like. His swag is like Donald Trump.
Yo, I was about to say that.
Because, you know, like you'll never get that. I guarantee we'll never see Donald Trump, like, really put his arm around somebody genuinely.
Yeah.
And that was George. Like, he never, ever put his arm around a player when I was with him in those 2 years. And that's just crazy. I've never seen a coach. Like, coaches have their favorites and have whatever, but, like, never once from George. George was just always just
he
like,
always had such talented players, too, you know?
Right, but he won 50 games a year.
I heard.
Yeah, he won. I'm like, you won 50? Like, what? How you going to compare my wins to your wins? Like, whatever.
All right. Unfortunately, you got to leave. You know, we don't want to hold you up here. We know you got to be somewhere. But
hold on. Can I ask him one more question?
Yeah, I was going to ask him one
more. We got 2 minutes.
All right, hold on. Well,
ask you something good, man.
Ask yours first.
No, mine is not. Is irrelevant to basketball, so you go ahead.
Well, I have one question and one thing we need from you. The question is, what is your role in squashing the Kenyon Martin, Tim Thomas thing?
Somebody said I had a role in it?
I don't know. Do you have a role? Are you going to be an olive branch here?
I had a role. So I moved to Calabasas. What's crazy about them two, with the whole beef and everything, they live less than a mile from each other.
Wow.
They literally live less than 1 mile from each other. They could walk to each other.
So it's
house.
Not even like a Matt Barnes situation where
they
could
have pulled up. But what's so funny, where we live at, so we live in Calabasas. So what's crazy about out there is like, we never see each other.
Yeah.
Like, we have to meet up, literally call, and let's go meet here. Like, for us to have only one grocery store, 5 or 6 restaurants, 1 sushi spot, 1 this, 1 that, we never bump into each other. You know, like, Tyson Chandler lives out there, Caron Butler. I haven't seen them guys one time. You understand what I'm saying? So it's the weirdest thing
it's
ever.
It's fine. Pete lives in Queens, and I live in Brooklyn. We barely see each other, so, you know.
Only at
but
work.
This is way close. Like, we live, like, within 3 miles of each other. Yeah. We never see each other. So what happened was, I forgot all about that beef thing, because that's my memory. So my daughter had a birthday party when we first got there, and they both got kids, so I invited both. So when they both came into the house, I just felt the tension. I was like, damn, I forgot the Fugazi story.
Yeah.
So long story short, I literally got them to, like, we were in my kitchen. We sat down, we talked, and it wasn't like a real, like, olive branch thing, but it was just like, it was just regular.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, we live out here. We were young. It's over. And then a couple weeks later, Kenyon, I did an interview with somebody, and it came back up, and Kenyon told us out of the story, which is the weirdest thing between those two, is because both of them have their own stories, and nothing matched. The only thing that matched about their story is that they was in the same place at the same time. All the events of it is totally different. Right. So I can see why, if his side of the story comes out, he's going to be upset. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I had it squashed for, like, seriously, 4 weeks until somebody interviewed the next team about it, and then whatever, it is what it is.
Your future teammate with the Gotham Ballers, too, Kenyon Martin.
Right. Well, now, me and Kenyon actually do business together.
Oh, yeah?
So he's my business partner well. Yeah, so we do a lot of stuff together.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to ask about All-Star real quick?
No, I wanted to ask, Will you read us the last thing that was said in that famous group chat? Don't tell us who said it or what the context. Just read us the last text.
It's boring.
We'll try to take it completely out of context.
It's totally boring.
Yeah, no, but you know, we'll spin it into something.
I bet there's been at least some sort of all-star chatter now that time has passed a little bit.
I don't know, man. Sometimes group chats, like, it takes a few minutes to spark it up. Yeah,
some of these guys actually, like, playing in NBA games tonight.
It was really boring. It was a stack. It was, first of all, it started, I get a little bit. It started with me. I'm like the start. I start everything.
You're so like, hey, guys, how is everyone?
I sent the Rondo IG into the room. So then one of the homies said, them boys all sensitive. That's what you get when you don't play for each other.
Steven Jackson.
Maybe. That's a good guess. Then I said what I said, and I was just like, word, Wade and Jimmy wrong for that. That's slanderous talk. Them kids trying to make a living. You don't say they don't care about winning. That's effed up. Mm-hmm. So then Rico said, you got to play for your brother next to you. And then somebody brought up Bron saying what he's saying. And then then somebody said, 80% of brothers in the league don't care about winning. Why you got to single out your teammates? Then everybody's like, facts, facts, agree. And then somebody put, they all bonus babies like Donnie Walsh say. And then somebody put, that's sad that brothers don't ride for each other no more. And then Stack put, say, I'm about to audition for my own radio show with Michael Rappaport. Say a prayer for me and stay tuned.
Yo.
And that's the end. Now, I might get killed for that
information. I was about to say, don't read anymore. We're going to get some, like, we're going to get suppressed over here.
So now the fans, y'all pray for Stack Jack to get his radio show. You know he got a lot to say.
Done. All right. Real quick, Super Bowl pick. We know you're big into football. Well, based on your Twitter account, you're big into football.
I'm going with them Dirty Birds.
Yeah.
That offense, man. But I respect the great Tom Brady. But that offense is – I watched football all season, and I feel like I've never seen Atlanta play the way they play in the playoffs. So, I mean, obviously it's their first time, and the 2 weeks could throw them off or whatever, but I'm going with them.
All right.
All right. Gotham Baller. I keep saying Ballers.
Gotham Ballers.
Champions League. For more information, visit GothamBallers.com or OwnGothamBallers.com. Al, it's a real pleasure, man. You're welcome back anytime around the East Coast.
Appreciate it.
Go Patrick School.
Yep.
I was about to say go whatever college you went to. We go to college. So go
School of Hard Knocks.
Go Ballers and go whatever business venture you're about to cap up on. All right, bro. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it, y'all.